This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report with my colleagues Ernesto Araújo, former foreign minister of the Republic of Brazil, and Joseph Vumar, executive director of Secure Free Society. We welcome Joseph back from his pilgrimage throughout the Americas. He's now returned to us to comment on a story that we all are watching, no matter where we are, Washington or rural Connecticut, or Buenos Aires. We're watching Venezuela. There is news from Venezuela that is both alarming and puzzling. National police officers took the journalist Carmela Longo and her son, in addition to some computer equipment, into custody, according to the Press Workers Union in Venezuela. According to the press union, at least eight other reporters have been detained following the disputed 28 July presidential election. The Ministry of Information, writes Reuters, and the Attorney General's office did not immediately respond to requests for comment. This, in addition to the details that we have over these many weeks of as many as 2,000 political prisoners detained in some fashion in Venezuela following the corrupt election, now uniformly denounced as unacceptable results, Maduro the winner. By the United States, by the OAS, by the EU, I could go on. It's a long list, led by Argentina. Joseph, I come to you immediately because you've been on the road listening to people about their concerns locally, but also about this corruption of democracy in Venezuela. Is there a political opinion that you heard more than any other? Are there controversies about Venezuela's conduct? Good evening to you, Joseph.
Good evening, John. So yeah, it did certainly felt like a pilgrimage. I was out quite in a few different Latin American countries, and I think the main opinion was pretty consistent in all the countries that I visited, whether it was Argentina, Colombia, Costa Rica, or Mexico, where most of the people that I talked to, not the policy folks, but the people, felt that, you know, Venezuela was pretty much a totalitarian country, so that the election, you know, they all realized that the election was lost by Maduro. It was won by the opposition, Edmundo González. Some don't even recognize the name of Edmundo González. I think there needs to be more effort to promote his name, because they think Maria Corina is the president-elect, because she's really the more popular one. But they understand that Maduro lost, but they believe that Maduro has an iron grip on the country and that an election's not going to get him out of power, that there's got to be take more forceful action. So that's like a lot of the conversation that people that I talked to, kind of what you would call the cab drive conversation on the streets of different capitals of Latin America. On the policy world, which, you know, I had meetings with policy conferences. We had some meetings with ministers and, you know, other policy folks. There's kind of a notion that there's certain countries, like the whole multilateral system in Latin America is dysfunctional because there's certain countries that have too many influences to steer away from what would be a kind of an easier decision, a more kind of a anti-Maduro position because of the financing. There's a lot of money that Venezuela is still involved in when it comes to not just formal, real money, but illicit money tied to drug trafficking, tied to money laundering. And then that money tends to have a very corrosive influence in the Caribbean, in Central America. And these countries, while their heads of state are, you know, positioned in favor of the opposition, going an extra mile, going a little further of potentially petitioning to leverage punishments on the Maduro regime for electoral fraud is constrained by these big money that's circulating throughout the hemisphere and throughout Latin America. And then lastly, on, you know, one of the countries I was in, I'm more particular, and so I'll share kind of an anecdote. You know, I flew from Colombia to Mexico in my most recent trip, the last leg of the trip abroad. And actually, I shared the flight with the Colombian foreign minister. He was on the flight. Now, I don't know this. I didn't speak to him, but my guess is that he was in Mexico to talk about this, about Venezuela. And a lot of the conversation between Colombia and Mexico, and you could add Brazil into this, is about essentially finding the next step. Because they're not going to recognize Edmundo Gonzalez as the victor. I think that's clear at this point. But they're also not going to just outly say that Maduro won the election. So they're trying to figure out what's the next step. Some have called for a new election. Some have called for a power-sharing agreement. And then there may be a couple other proposals that are going to be made in the near future. But all of them, all they do, and this has been my biggest criticism to those countries in particular, Brazil, Mexico, and Colombia, is that all they do in practice is buy time. They're buying time in the Maduro regime. They're not going to even not just to fabricate, you know, fabricate ballots and, you know, try to support their claim that Maduro won by 51-44. But more importantly, to get this out of the news cycle, to let people, it's basically a war of attrition, have the Venezuelan people get tired. You know, you mentioned the 2000 political prisoners, to have the news cycle move towards whatever topic. And as this gets closer to the U.S. election, inevitably here in the United States, you know, the conversation is going to be more about what's happening here, not what's happening abroad. And so I think that that's really the most concerning thing. And Maria Corina's strategy on the flip side is to sporadically, not persistently, sporadically have big rallies and big movements, because she understands that if they're going to the streets every day, they're going to get tired. The people can't be on the streets for months. They're not only going to be hurt because they're going to be prosecuted and they're going to be repressed, but they're just physically going to get tired. So she's spreading out these big mobilizations every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, kind of very random, to not give any rhyme to it or rhythm. But I think that's a smart strategy, because she understands right now they're in a war of attrition.
Ernesto, a very good day to you. The news from Caracas continues alarming. In the coming hours, this according to the Attorney General of Venezuela, in the coming hours, the citizen Edmundo Gonzalez Urrutia, who is the winner of the presidential contest, the leader of the opposition on the ticket, will be cited by this public ministry on the basis of the ongoing investigation, so he can give testimony about his responsibility, says the Attorney General of Venezuela, where he declares himself responsible for the webpage, which is usurping the virtue and the jurisdiction that only corresponds to the electoral authorities. Translating all that, lawfare. This is something that you're very familiar with in Brazil. My ironic comment is lawfare is successful. Is that a fair way to summarize this? They're using the law to persecute the winner of the election.
Good day, John. Yes, it's totally warfare and lawfare in the particular, let's say, narco-socialist style, which is the one of Venezuela, a country where there's obviously no law. Law is the people in power. So, but at the same time, it deceives some people in the democratic West, less and less, but it still does, or at least give some room to a narrative that the law is being followed somehow. So it's that's the worst kind of dictatorship, the dictatorship that is a travesty of democracy, with a pretense of rule of law and things like that. So they have much more space in the press and in the public opinion internationally than they should. Regarding Edmundo Gonzalez, I think maybe what Maduro is trying to do, and regarding Maria Corina as well, is to create bargaining chips and maybe imprison both of them in order later to negotiate. Okay, so I can release them, but in exchange for recognition of my stay in power or something like that. It might be a part of his strategy. Lawfare, you mentioned Brazil, of course, and Brazil is a very similar, you know, very similar situation to Venezuela. There is a facade of democracy, of rule of law, but actually it's a completely closed system, which is ruling Brazil, a tyrannical system with no freedom of expression, with where the right-wing, the conservatives are outside of the cover of the law, and only the left wing or the people in the system are covered and protected by the law. So, which brings us to the fact that Brazil and Venezuela are in the same boat for a long time in terms of the project of domination of Latin America, which we call the São Paulo Forum, since the early 90s with the alliance of Lula and Fidel Castro, later Lula and Chavez, now Lula and Maduro. So Lula and Maduro are not just two guys who met sometime. No, they are part of and key to this long-standing project, which brought organized crime together with left-wing policies in Latin America, which, especially from the 2000s, brought Latin America towards the China-Russia bloc. So I think that's what must be recognized, how this power system works, what are its instruments. So you're not dealing with a normal country in the case of Brazil, which just is looking towards Venezuela as a neighboring country with some problems. No, Brazil is part, with Lula, is part of a power project which is anti-Western, anti-democracy for a long time. So anything that Lula is doing or that Brazil is doing with its diplomacy, I think should be read under that assumption. Okay, otherwise we're not talking about the real game.
Lula da Silva says that there should be a second election. Maduro rejects it. So does the opposition. Why would he say that? He wouldn't permit a second election in his country.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's a big contradiction that people are pointing to. So I think Lula still wants to preserve some credibility in regards of the United States and other countries. So he cannot recognize Maduro because this would fly on the face of the international community. On the other hand, he will, as Joseph also was saying, Lula will never recognize Edmundo Gonzalez. So they are trying to reach some sort of a middle of the road, which would just be a pro-Maduro solution, giving Maduro time to prepare another election. So that's what I said. I mean, imagine you have a bank robbery and the robbers are caught, and then you give them a second opportunity to rob the bank. Okay, that's what they're trying to do. But this has to do with a longer term strategy, where Lula needs to preserve some of his international capital in order to work for the tyrannical governments in Venezuela and in Brazil itself, because Lula needs to be seen as a Democrat in order to preserve an anti-democratic system in Brazil itself.
Ernesto Araújo, former foreign minister of the Republic of Brazil, Joseph Vumar, executive director of Secure Free Society. We're headed to the other countries semi-endorsing Maduro's victory and why. This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report. I'm John Bannon.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's,